is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, final hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Thursday in the big city.
That
hope you're
by.
Staying dry. Yeah, first 2 hours flying by on a crappy day in the city. Soggy.
Is it going to continue to rain all week or for the remainder
weekend
of the week?
Weekend is supposed to be nice. Doesn't matter because the roof will be closed for the Texans game, as we all know.
That is true.
But the weather should be clearing up and good for the weekend. But endure this rain and crap all day and all night as it's not going anywhere. Rockets tomorrow night against the Sixers.
Yes.
Just wanted to cover this a little bit. Look, from a standpoint of Westbrook and Harden, same guys, same night, playing good basketball, getting their numbers. They did what they needed to do, and they beat a good team. Denver, don't sleep on them now. Denver's a good team, and Denver came into Toyota Center on New Year's Eve, and they got it handed to them by a Rockets team that played very, very well, got production, like I said, out of their two big guys, but they got production from Eric Gordon and other guys as well. That's the kind of Rockets basketball you need to see going forward for them to actually have a legitimate shot to make some waves in the league. And it's going to be a big test tomorrow night because Philly handed it to the Bucks on Christmas Day and then have just completely crapped the bed since. So it shows that they have some, they're wildly inconsistent. That's exactly what you could say about the Rockets until they start consistently beating good teams. And a good test is going to be tomorrow night on ESPN with Embiid and the Sixers playing the Rockets.
Harden's probably still going to get his numbers. You know, he got 35 points in that Nuggets game. They actually have a very similar record, 23-10, the Denver Nuggets,
yep.
23-11.
People don't realize that.
Yeah, for the Rockets. And look, you were high on them before last year. Like, this would be the second year, I think, they were considered a good team, right? Two years ago, I don't think they were considered that great. But it's when you beat a team like Denver, it does mean something, even though they don't have the star power. You got Millsap, you got Murray, you got Barton. But for the most part, there's no real star power on this team. And for them to do what they've been able to do just with this roster, the way it sits, it's pretty impressive. I think it's a sentiment to coaching, and a lot of good things. But the 76ers game, I'm going to be going there tomorrow because I want to look forward to it. I think that's a good test. Are you going to catch the 76ers on a downhill? Are they going to continue this streak?
Is Embiid going to play? I mean, you got all these questions. Look, I think, and again, it goes back to our discussion even on signature shoe guys and everything else. Superstar players these days aren't quite to the caliber as when you knew that the Bulls were coming to town and they had Michael and Scotty. You knew that the Celtics, when they were coming to town, they had Bird, but then they had Kyrie. Now it's, you know, but when you look at guys now and you look at teams, yeah, they're getting the money. But overall, are they the team? Are they overrated? Because Ben Simmons, why are we making such a big deal that he made a three? I mean, as a guy being paid all that money, if you haven't developed that part of your game, in the offseason, you need to be working on it because that's what makes you a true superstar-type player that's unstoppable, that has moves. That Embiid, he's got all the moves. He can shoot threes. He can go on the post. But can he do it on a consistent basis? And can he stay healthy?
I don't know if you're Ben Simmons and you're not throwing up 1,000 three-pointers in practice.
That's what I mean.
Every single time you practice or day or whatever it is. Because that's exactly what I thought of when I thought about Ben Simmons. I'm like, just second this guy just shoots with the right coach and he works on his form and he works on his stroke and he makes sure that this is a consistent situation. Dude,
I told you guys.
Ben Simmons is going to be amazing if he can do that.
I told you guys. Jason Kidd and Gary Payton came into this league with 25-letter alphabets with no J in it. But you know what? They busted their ass until they got one. So much so that Jason Kidd is top five all-time in three-point made field goals. So therefore, you realize he worked on his game. Just because you get the money doesn't mean you need to. Dwight Howard's a perfect example. Dwight Howard made all the money in the world, but he had Kevin McHale and he had Akeem Olajuwon at his disposal. What did he do? They're okay. Yeah, I'll listen, but I'm not going to learn. And guess what? Now he's a bench player on the Lakers trying to stay relevant, where he had the talent and the tools to be one of the better players of all time if he really worked at his craft. They're not working at their craft. Sixers don't impress me. They don't intimidate me. They shouldn't intimidate the Rockets either. And that's a team that the Rockets should make a statement by blowing their doors off.
Yeah, I think they should win. It should be a must. I don't know if it's a must-win game, but it's a game that they should win, is the way I would look at it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's a must-win game, but it's a game where they could make a statement to the rest of the league.
Right.
And say, look, we're really putting it together now. We know that now we have Eric Gordon. We know what we can do and what we do well. And this is what we're going to do to dismantle teams. And at the same time, then, dispel what everybody is saying, which is they can score with anybody. And you got to be able to score with them. But the same way they can go up 20, they can blow a lead, a 20-point lead in 5 minutes because they can't stop anybody.
Yeah, and the Lakers are kind of, I mean, the Lakers blew a 33-point lead or 36-point lead and almost lost, and they cut it down to 10.
The Phoenix game last night?
Yep, it was the Phoenix game. And I think Anthony Davis had some comments about it too. But yeah, I mean, there's certain teams that tend to struggle in the second half. Rockets can be that team, especially in the fourth quarter. We talked about that. But they don't necessarily do it all the time.
So where are you on this? Harden says after the game, with all the double teams that he's been seeing lately, it's a sign of respect. It's everybody talking about the fact that it means I'm pretty good. What's your take on the fact that he's... For me, from a James Harden perspective, blow your own horn all you want, but it's also a sign that the league knows what the hell to do come playoff time.
Yeah, I feel like he probably could have used a better choice of words, but I feel like I know what he's saying. I think he was trying to say that it does come off cocky any way you say it, but like he was just trying to say that he's commanded those double teams, and a lot of players do, and he's been able to like kind of work around it. I don't know if it's that cocky. I've heard him say more cocky stuff than that, but
and you're there all the time. But I mean, when the headline is that Harden sees double teams as a sign of respect,
yeah,
it says to me that no one really respects your game. Because guess what? The first round of All-Star balloting came out, and you know what? Harden's not one of the top two vote-getters.
Oh, that's what you're saying. You're saying they don't. You think it's the opposite.
No, it's because in the... You know what? Here's the thing. You can look at that from that perspective of your James Harden. But I look at it as the league saying, get yours in the regular season, but if you truly want to get the respect of the players and the league and basketball aficionados, win in the playoffs when they're going to not only double team you, but it's going to be the Belichick philosophy. They're going to take the best weapon you have and limit it. So you're going to see schemes that can't be done when you're playing back-to-backs and a grueling regular season schedule. When you're playing a 7-game series against the Rockets, you damn well know that if we double team James, get the ball out of his hands and limit his touches, that they'll live with the fact that Russ Westbrook shooting jump shots or in a half court and the supporting cast of the Rockets is something that any team in the league will deal with if they don't have to deal with James. And that's what they're going to see. So if you want the true meaning of they respect your game, James, win in the playoffs.
I totally agree with that. I always love to hear the question before I make any opinion on it, because I always feel like the way they word questions make the player look bad sometimes. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, in terms of the getting respect, I feel like teams and players respect this game.
Let me say this. You have to respect Harden's offensive ability and the numbers that he's putting
right
up. You just have to. But in terms of how does that translate to respecting the team and the chances to win a championship and the legacy which is created by wins in the playoffs and titles and things, I don't think that's changed.
Yeah.
The only thing that's going to change that is when he starts winning playoff series and gets them to the point where they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, they have to get to the finals. I'm ready to see. Look, I'm a Rockets fan too. I'm done. I don't want to see these round two or Western Conference Finals bounces. I want to see them go to the finals. They have two superstars, and it's also a little bit more pressure on guys like Eric Gordon. When James Harden gets that double team, you have to make teams feel like, okay, we're double teaming James Harden. Russell Westbrook is obviously an option, but are any of these other guys going to be as deadly or even consistent in the event that we double a guy like James Harden? And I think that puts pressure on guys like Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker. Obviously, Gerald Green is not with the team, but those guys have to step up when he's consistently being double teamed. And I think it will force the defense to kind of go back and forth. Sometimes they're very consistent. Sometimes the game plan is absolutely geared toward defending James Harden. And whatever they do, and they may have one or two guys assigned to him, but sometimes it's not.
Okay, but can I say this?
Sure.
And this is the unpopular opinion among Rockets fans, and this is why I want Daryl to face more scrutiny. The Rockets are a better team with Chris Paul than anything that I've seen with Russell Westbrook. And yes, you had to worry about Chris Paul's health. But I don't worry about the finances when I know that when Chris Paul was healthy, and I told y'all he was going to come back and have a hell of a year this year. And so far he has.
Yeah.
But because he can make the three consistently and he can still create for others, and he got himself into a point where he changed his diet. He did some things to where he's got some more longevity. He's looked like he's resurrected a lot of portions of his career. I just think come playoff time, they were a tougher team to scheme against with Chris Paul than they're ever going to be with Russell Westbrook, especially playing the way they're playing, because they're not defending anybody right now, and they're not feeding off Russ's strength by getting him the ball and letting him go downhill and attack defenses. They're making him play around James Harden, and teams are like, you see what they do to Giannis, but they do the same thing to Russ. They say, here's 15 feet of space. Shoot the three.
Yeah. Chris Paul, I actually agree with you, and I think it's on this team to prove that they can be a better team without Chris Paul. But we obviously knew what was the situation there. Chris Paul obviously felt disrespected by James Harden. One rumor, or not, I don't know if it's still considered a rumor, but the fact that, you know, when Chris Paul was running the offense, James Harden didn't seem too interested or engaged. But when James Harden was running the offense, Chris Paul always had his back, and that really bothered Chris Paul.
True.
I don't know if that's necessarily true or the absolute case of why they hated each other at the end there, but I think it's safe to say that, yes, Chris Paul on the Rockets was a better team than this team. It's up to this team with Westbrook to prove that they can be a better team than Chris Paul. And I think one way to do that.
But why do you put that on Russ? Why don't you put that on James? Because James is getting his numbers now.
That's
fair. And he's still doing this. But why doesn't James do less so they can achieve more?
Yeah. And look, but Westbrook has embraced that role, though, that way.
Russ has been a trooper and just going along and going with the flow and doing whatever they say.
He doesn't seem frustrated with Harden either.
But because they're boys. But the thing is, if you want to be a better team, James says, well, I'm not worried about stats. Right, because you're still leading the league in scoring. Yeah. But if you weren't really worried about stats, take your scoring down 10 points a game, but let Russ have the ball going up court when they're trying to get in transition to create a break situation where Russ can flourish instead of giving Russ, you know, wide open threes, because teams are saying, go ahead, if that's our, either take James Harden at his best or take Russ shooting a three, shoot the three, Russ.
Yeah, you want Russ to attack the basket, maybe even go for the mid-range. That's probably his best bet.
Yeah, I no feel doubt. So there you go. So a little Rockets talk as we continue to roll on. Final hour of the show. I'd like to remind you at this point and always throughout the usual suspects, we take you till 4. Blitz takes you till 7. Aaron, Fred, AJ, they'll ride you on the ride home if you are willing to stick around. So that didn't sound right. I don't know what they're riding, but they'll take you home in more ways than one. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, final hour of the show. It is Nick, myself, Aaron. Barry out, sick, hopefully back tomorrow. He's been fighting it for quite a while.
It's normal, right? Fred and AJ?
Everybody's good?
Yeah.
All right. So I don't know what they're riding, but hopefully on the ride home, people will be listening to you guys, Aaron. I don't know how that happened.
I'll tell you, we're talking about the weather. On my ride in, I take 610. You couldn't see NRG from 610.
Oh, it was like that foggy in the rain?
It was that foggy and nasty.
It's been bad. Yeah,
so they were anybody saying, listening and driving, be careful.
Yeah, and stop with the, you know, it's one thing when you're texting and obviously, but you got to pay more attention. You can't tailgate people in this weather, because the roads are slick. So, yeah, you got to be careful about that stuff out there. And it's really kind of nasty out. So be careful as you are, whatever you're doing. If you're going from work home and or you are commuting otherwise or just driving around town, be careful because it's swampy out there and it's nasty. I want to get Riley's tweet in here before we go any further. But he said, good point on CP3 being tough to game plan for. He's a huge Thunder fan, by the way. He said, I've seen a night and day difference in the Thunder, especially closing out games. Didn't know it was possible to see an end of an OKC game where he didn't have to pull his hair out because Russ couldn't shoot. And I think the biggest knack on Chris Paul was contract and hamstring. But other than that, when you look at how dynamic a game he has and you watch what he's done this year, and not only what he's done to recreate his own game and his own talents, Gilchrist Alexander, the young guys, the way he's been able to help them develop, even Dennis Schroeder, That's what he could be doing with guys like Ben McLemore, guys like Daniel House, so that they could be more valuable contributors when you need them the most. Right now, your two best players are still trying to figure out what they're trying to do. You're not making anybody better in the process.
I'd like to think that Chris Paul, when he was kind of coaching guys, the younger guys on the court, he was also doing it off the court and like in practice. James Harden doesn't strike me as that guy. I feel like most of the coaching and the yelling is done in-game, on the court, right when a mistake happened or when he needs a player to be in a particular position. Chris Paul is an impact player. So whether you feel like he's an overpaid player or he's old or past his prime, he's an immediate impact player. So he makes your team better the second he's on your roster. And there's a number of players that are like that, not many. The contract thing is obviously a product of the whole TV contract situation. We knew he was going to get paid. We knew there was probably
a cap issue situation. And the fact of the matter is that Russ is going to make more. But you thought you were getting a younger, better version of the player you need for your team. But again, you've got to think schematically about making your best player and the things that he brings to the table better, or have a guy that's more conducive to playing alongside of him. Chris was a better Robin than Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, but I think the other thing is they're probably done with considering the risk of the hamstring. They were probably done. They were probably way past that, and you have a much more durable player in Russell Westbrook.
Chris Paul was a victim of circumstance, because otherwise everybody was crapping all over him. He didn't have anything left. He can't do it anymore. But guess what? It was just because they were all ticked off that they lost a chance to go to the finals because of his hamstring.
Yeah, but the second he's off the court, though, that team is not as good to be. They're not an NBA champion.
Come on, Raybould, you want in? Get in. What do you got?
The second Chris Paul is off the court when he was on the Rockets, James Harden could not do it by himself. He couldn't, and that's
why not. He's supposed to be the best player on the team.
Most teams in the NBA in this multi-star era is not going to be able to do it without all their stars, especially when there was only two. Well,
Kevin Durant can do it. The guys that can do it can do it.
Kevin Durant did it with Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry.
Kevin Durant also was capable of carrying a team if the other guy was hurt or stepped out. That's why
he never did that in the Russell Westbrook KD environment. He never won a championship.
No. Right. But you know why? Go back and look at how OKC lost that final year with a 3-1 lead against the Warriors. The fact that they lost the series was because Russ couldn't handle the fact that KD was Batman and he was Robin, and Russ started pulling a lot of bad shots. Then they got mad at each other, and they self-destructed in front of the entire basketball world.
I remember that. I remember Russell Westbrook. I remember that dynamic becoming a big deal after the 3-1 lead was lost.
That's why KD got out.
Right, but at the same time, he's only been to the finals, right? He's never won a championship.
KD?
Right. No, OKC, that is.
Right. They
never won a championship.
Right.
Same thing with James Harden. He never won a championship, and he wasn't going to do that without Chris Paul. He's not. The thing is Chris
he's not going to do it with Russell Westbrook either.
It's a risk you have to take every single time. If you're an owner, you're a general manager, you have to consider the fact that there's a big possibility Chris Paul will not be playing in the postseason at some point. And a lot of teams may not want to go through that risk.
I think Nick's right. I mean, we're in an era where it takes multiple stars. Now, everybody will, the Warriors did it when it was only Steph and Clay. Well, they were stars that just hadn't been discovered yet.
Draymond.
Yeah. No. It was a team that was just a diamond in the rough that all of a sudden you look at it now and you go, yeah, those guys are big names. They're big stars. But you take any one of them and put them on a team by themselves where they're the guy.
Sure, but here's the thing. We're not talking about super teams anymore. The Warriors of old are gone. The Beatles were broken up because of the fact that KD went to the Nets. So the thing is now you say, well, in order to compete for a title this year, you need to have two. But to me, the bigger thing is how strong is your one and how strong is your supporting cast? And then what's the chemistry between your one and your two? Because you look at all the factors being considered. If the Rockets had a couple shooters, legit shooters, they would be in a better position, but it still doesn't change the fact that your second best player can't shoot a three, and they're not playing in a style of play that gets the best out of what he brings to the table. Whereas the Lakers have the perfect combination. You got a guy in LeBron that either can handle it or facilitate it. You got a guy in Davis who can either shoot the three, finish on the break, or go down a low post and get you buckets, but they complement each other. There's the duos that are having the most success complement one another. The Rockets don't have it. They were more complimentary with Chris Paul and James Harden than they are with Russell Westbrook and James Harden.
Yeah, and I almost feel like, and this probably would never happen because of the way the salary cap situation is, and now that we're in a two-star type of league as opposed to multiple stars, but Chris Paul as a third star would be, I feel like, ideal. Because if he got injured,
I told you that
you still would have two stars to deal with.
But I said this year, if Chris Paul is traded and he becomes the third star on in any other team or whatever team he goes to, that could be the difference between a team getting over the hump and winning a title or not.
Yeah. So essentially, he has to be added to a two-star team, is what you're saying.
I don't think that necessarily is the case.
Okay.
I think that's a scenario. But I'll tell you this. Here's my I combat both of your arguments with this. You said it has to be a two-star. What's Milwaukee got? They got Giannis and they got a bunch of role players. Chris Middleton is paid like a second superstar.
But he's not.
He's not playing like it.
No.
So now that debunks that whole theory because you got one guy as the star of the best record in basketball. There's not a second star there.
Yeah.
Best record in basketball regular season. Until they do it in the postseason, I'm not going to believe it. Just like with the Rockets. You can do anything you want during the regular season until you have one star who's going to carry you through the entire postseason and get you a ring. None of it matters.
But now you come back to my point, because my point is I don't care what James Harden's done regular season, and I don't care if he thinks they're respecting me by double-teaming me. The only way they're going to truly respect you for you being at a higher level than anybody else in terms of your basketball abilities is you got to do it in the postseason.
Oh, I've agreed with that.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, if you're Daryl Morey and you're constructing a team, that's what the frustration I continue to have is you've got to build to fill the voids that your best player doesn't have. So if James needs shooters around him, is Russ better than Chris Paul? No, it's just that James got his feelings hurt and they got sideways and decided the best thing to do was to move on. Maybe it wasn't.
You move on from the older player he's an older player that has a proven injury record and he's not getting along with your best player. Like,
let me ask you a question.
How do you not get rid of him?
How do you not? You put the two guys in a room and say, you guys can work your way through this. And in order, if you guys want to achieve more as a team, you're better than this. You can put your ego aside and work through it. Because you know what? If I have you look at Oklahoma City at the start of the year, did you think they'd even be sniffing talks of a playoff? Being in the playoffs.
I think we did our top 8 seeds. We didn't say OKC would be a top 8
close.
Seed. No. Probably not then.
Chris Paul is the reason why that team is where they are right now, and that's why I'm saying it's a frustration for all of Rockets fans. But I know it's hard to swallow, but they were a better team with Chris Paul than they are with Russell Westbrook, at least the way they're playing right now.
And look, some of it's on Chris Paul, and you've mentioned this in the past. How much money do you want to make, and how bad do you want a championship?
True.
And he's making a lot of money.
He could have made some sacrifices, too, and not had those last couple years on that deal and used that money to get better players around him.
You can tell he's not going to do that. He's not gonna give up money.
He's not Tom Brady-esque that way, is what you're saying.
No, he's not going to do that.
All right, half hour to go on the show. 30 minutes on the clock when we come back. Room for you to get in. 713-780-3776. HRP listening line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. Usual suspects. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. You are listening to The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sharara.
We got one of those two. All right, I got questions for you guys. Because I know we've been deep in a lot of different topics, sneakers and basketball and football and college bowl games and everything else. So Lisa, for Christmas, got the family, and I know that, Aaron, you dabble in cooking, a smokeless grill. It's supposed to be the new thing, like the air fryer, okay? So it's a fairly big counter-sized rectangular deal. You fill 2 cups of water at the very bottom underneath, and it's supposed to take the smoke and the stink and everything out. So she's like, now you can do all your chicken breasts and you can put them in Tupperware and you can cook them, a lot of them in one sitting real quick, and then you'll have them for the week and it'll be great. And so I was like, okay, I'm open to it. We'll try it. So the other night we tried it. Okay, so it cooked the chicken very quickly, all right? But I put like salt, pepper, seasoning, garlic, onion, red pepper, all this different stuff on it. The most tasteless chicken I've ever had in my life.
I guess it's no sous vide. Barry would have all kinds of opinions on this.
Yeah, I know he would, Aaron. I don't know what you think about this, but so here's the thing. So I'm like, okay. So yeah, it made the chicken. It made it quickly. It's only like 3 or 4 minutes on either side. It's done, and it cooked it thoroughly. It was juicy. Had no flavor, no matter what a season I put on it. So my dumb ass, I fire it up again the other night, and she goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "Don't worry about that. I'm going to make some more chicken." So I make the chicken. But at the same time, I also heated up a frying pan and decided at the very end, I was going to sear it a little bit to give it a little flavor from the pan. It would help me. It helped me flavor the chicken. It certainly didn't help me stink up the house. I stunk up every room in the house just that quickly. And I don't know about y'all, but for some reason, our house, whatever you cook in the kitchen, if you just make one misstep, it can smell up the whole house.
Mine can.
Man, I felt so bad. I was going room to room with Febreze. I was apologizing. I was like, you know what? The chicken tasted better, but I get the whole idea of the smokeless grill. But yeah,
that seems like the only advantage, the fact that it's smokeless.
Yeah, I wasn't big on it. I don't know if you have any feelings on it, but it just there was no flavor to it.
I've seen them before. I've never used one. One of my old part-time jobs working where I worked around grills,
yeah.
We had a couple of them because it was the new hot thing.
Yeah.
And nothing ever really made me want to try it, but I wonder what if you would try to marinate it. Like,
I thought about that too.
Like, you're making chicken breasts, puncture them with forks,
yep.
Throw them in a bag overnight with some type of marinade on them, let them soak for at least 24 hours, and then throw them on there.
They do have a quick marinade. Have you ever done that?
I've done
it. The 20 minute one?
Because the problem that I was concerned about is, depending on what you put on the chicken, that's going to end up being part of the cleanup and it's going to get all gunked up in the grids and the grill and everything like that. But I will say this, the thing cleans up like a dream. It's very easy to disassemble and clean up all the parts. It goes back together very quickly. It stores very easily. And like I said, it cooks the chicken very rapidly, but it had no flavor. And I thought, you know, that's what I'm going to have to do. And it's the lazy part of me that doesn't want to sit there and like think overnight, I'm going to have to marinate chicken. But that's the only way I could conceptually think about get flavor in the chicken and still be able to cook it that quickly.
Being able to cook it clean and easy is the big thing with appliances. That's why the air fryer is kind of popular. That's why the smokeless grill is probably kind of, yeah. Although I did look it up, it ranges anywhere from like 40 to 60 or 70 bucks. It doesn't seem very expensive.
No, it's an inexpensive way to try and quickly prepare chicken. But to me, there was just absolutely no flavor to it. I was like, man, I don't want to poo-poo on her.
See, I'd rather take the time and fire up a real grill,
yeah.
And cook it over a flame and let it get charred and stuff like that.
I'm with you.
Get flavor.
That's the
I
for
can
me,
deal with the setup, the teardown, all that.
That's so important to me is to get that flavor from the grill itself. That at least don't understand that because she's obviously vegan. She's not big on it. And I'm like, look. You don't understand how valuable it is to have that flavor in the chicken. That makes that's
the world
the whole deal.
It makes bad cooks look tolerable. Like I can't cook anything. I feel like I do a halfway decent job when I'm on the grill. Other than that, I can't really cook anything.
I can see
scrambled eggs, maybe.
I can see that.
Yeah.
All right. Texans news of the day, and again, we'll have Sarah Barshop hopefully tomorrow. But JJ is back. Bill O'Brien stating that he's going to be on the field for a good portion of the game. I don't know if that's gamesmanship and making the Bills have to game plan for him more.
So Gibson is on the IR, right?
Yep.
And he said he's going to be in there quite a bit. So I would imagine he's just going to throw him in the... He just wants a whole bunch of reps. He doesn't want a situation where he's just going to test them out.
I mean, here it is from a Bill O'Brien perspective, if you're looking at it just like you've looked at how he's looked at the whole season in terms of going for it. He doesn't even know if JJ is going to be on the roster next year because of how big of a cap hit that is.
Yeah.
So the fact that he has declared himself and the medical staff has declared himself ready to play, he's okay to play, then why wouldn't you throw him out there and let him go for it? If he re-injures it, you may not be there next year or he may not be there next year.
Yeah.
But if he is capable of getting back out there and being effective and disruptive, why wouldn't you throw him out there for the majority of the game?
Yeah, and look, I thought for sure that he would not make the first playoff game, and then I was wrong. I thought a more reasonable timetable would be him playing in the second playoff game in the event the Texans got past the first game, but it looks like he's ready. And look, you know J.J. Watt, I don't feel like he's going to let up. Like when he's coming off an injury. He's excited. So he's going to go 100%. Hopefully he doesn't get injured.
He's not pulling a Marshawn Lynch. Let's put it that way. If he's going to be out there, he's going to go at it. And he's going to go hard. And so that's one thing you don't have to worry about when you put JJ on the field. And he couldn't be any worse than what they've done from a pass rush perspective. Because think about all the time that he's been out. And then realize that now he's coming back and his stats still lead the team in terms of sacks and pass rush and all these other things. That shows you just how minuscule and weak their pass rush has been since he went out of the lineup. So throw him back out there and let him do whatever he can do. And hopefully he can give you a boost because, you know, Barry and I went back and forth on this the other day. Whitney Mercilus and the money that they gave him and what they, to me, is just, it's ridiculous. When you look at Nick Martin and Whitney Mercilus and those contracts and the fact that
the $54 million contract he just got?
Yeah, I mean,
for Whitney.
And Nick Martin's what, the second highest paid center in football? I get Bill O'Brien going for it. I get wearing the dual hats, the GM and the coach, but it's just been so mismanaged financially that it's going to bite him in the butt that you better throw all caution to the wind and go for it, and you better beat the Buffalo Bills, and you better do more than that. Because honestly, after this season, I don't know what you're going to do.
So you feel like the guaranteed, I think it was $24.5 million
of the 54
is guaranteed.
It's ridiculous.
That's too much? It's probably structured like a lot of NFL contracts where it gets bigger as the contract progresses. So year three or four, in the event they don't feel like he's not up
to
par.
Do you feel like he's the sixth best linebacker
in
football?
We had this conversation. Yeah, I agreed with you there.
Okay. Do you feel Nick Martin is the second best center in football?
No, but it's a market.
Then why are you doing it?
Someone might surpass Nick Martin and get paid.
Okay, but here's the thing. It's the risk you got to take is letting them test the market. And realize that you have Deshaun's contract coming up. You have to pay Tunsil. Otherwise, that trade looks ridiculously bad.
Yeah.
So with all the money that you're going to have to commit to those kind of deals, you can't just think you're getting ahead of the game and sign. If you get ahead of the game and sign them to a deal that's a discount, works for the team, works for the player, great. But if you're signing him just to make him the sixth highest paid linebacker and the second highest paid center just for the sake of getting his deal done, you're hindering and handicapping your own squad.
I mean, I think the Texans would have liked to be able to sign him at something closer to, I don't know, $45 million if it was possible. But, you know, maybe the market said.
You don't know what the market said because you didn't want to try it. That's my thing. Why wouldn't you just ride it out now? You're this far along in the season and go, hey, guess what? We're going to let you get your best offers. And just so you know, we love you. And we're going to talk to you after you bring those best offers to the table. We've seen this happen time and time again with free agents. Sometimes that's the best way to go about it because you know what? They'd love to. Dallas Keuchel, the Astros would love to say, hey, Dallas, get your best offer, bring it back to us. But if you're thinking that we're going to give you 5 years and 100 mil before you hit free agency, you're out of your mind.
Because
you're bidding against yourself.
You make some good points. I don't necessarily hate the Mercilus contract as much as you do. But if you look at the stats, 7.5 sacks for the season, four forced fumbles and two interceptions. I mean, he's definitely with those numbers. He's probably not the sixth best, like you mentioned. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he had a good. Maybe he had a good agent. Maybe the agent did lobby and speak
AJ
with other
had
teams.
A great comment the other day when they were talking about on the blitz, and he said he must be dominating in practice because from what you see on the field,
he's also
Bill
very likable.
Oh, so what? So it's a lot of likable guys.
Dude, I can't tell you how. I feel like Ryan Anderson was likable.
Can I ask you a question? Does likable guys get you win you football games?
No, but they might get you paid.
It's the same reason why that philosophy has sucked for so many years for the Texans, because Marcus Peters wasn't drafted because he wasn't a good enough guy. Guess what? He's a hell of a player that would have helped you win football games.
I do feel like likability helps, though. I feel like that helps you get paid. And if everybody likes you around the team, I think they're more tempted to sign you and give you money. Like, especially, let's say the players really like him. Okay, that's one thing. But let's say the general managers and the coaches and they love him. He might get paid more than he's supposed
to. But guess what? People can hate the hell out of a Terrell Owens or guys like that, but they can get you to a Super Bowl. If you're a likable guy, it could get you fired.
Look, I feel like Ryan Anderson was likable. He was pathetic on the court.
Right, look at that.
$20 million a year.
Look what that got you. Lots of money and no results.
Yeah.
Brace yourself, Texans fans. Could be a hell of a ride. All right, one segment to go on the show. We'll turn it over to the Blitz next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's been
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Yeah, shout out to the Veritex Community Studio. I mean, we've got new sponsors. It's a new year. Things are rocking and rolling here at ESPN 97.5, so we appreciate the sponsors. We appreciate you guys following us. News of the day, as the Washington Redskins introduced their new head coach.
The tandem is Rivera and Jack Del Rio,
yeah, right? Riverboat Ron is now at the helm of the Washington Redskins. Jack Del Rio will be his defensive coordinator.
I like it.
I think it's good structure for a franchise that has had anything but that, with Bruce Allen as president. Dan Snyder, who's at any moment's notice, is like Jerry Jones light, the way he chimes in and makes decisions and decides things. It's time they get some structure, as opposed to when we haven't been on the air since this all went down, but the Cleveland Browns, who not only got rid of their coach, which was a bad hire in Freddie Kitchens, but they want to restructure the front office. So therefore, GM John Dorsey, who's done so many good things for that franchise since they tried a baseball guy running it, from a football perspective, he made the trades that brought you OBJ, that brought you the franchise players that they have on offense and defense, but made one bad mistake in Freddie Kitchens. Now, they went back and they said to him, we're going to restructure. You're not going to have a lot of the power you had, right, but we want you to stay. Why would he?
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, I guess, when Schefter reported, he said that's why they used the words parting ways, was because general manager or former general manager John Dorsey was not going to accept those terms. And considering the fact that he's been the general manager for 2 years, he's always had that power. And then he got so much credit for what he did in the offseason, creating the hype, getting the roster with all those good players and all those names. Look, I think John Dorsey has proved himself just in one season that it wasn't necessary. It's not a dumb move for him to not take that, to reject that and see if he can get an opportunity somewhere else, because that one, to me, track records, sample size, are great. When you have just one or two, it can make you look way better than you really are. He can get a deal anywhere. He can be a general manager anywhere.
They're also saying they're not going to hire a new general manager until they hire a head coach and let the head coach have a say-so in who becomes the general manager. Isn't that bass-ackwards? Isn't that like...
Sounds like the Texans.
Yeah, it sounds worse than that from the standpoint of you're building it from the coach up instead of from the front office down and making sure that you have a structure and a hierarchy and a chemistry. I mean, I understand he screwed up in John Dorsey. John Dorsey is a highly reputable general manager that's going to have another job sooner rather than later.
Sure.
But he brought credibility to your entire franchise. And not only did he bring credibility, he brought you Jarvis Landry. And then he brought you OBJ. And then he brought you Olivier Vernon on the defensive side of the football. Then he got you, he drafted Nick Chubb. He drafted Baker Mayfield, whether you like it or not. The first year looked like it was going in the right direction. He then got Kareem Hunt to come to your franchise, even though he had his missteps. You had a guy that became a very, very productive back in the second half of the season. If you get the right coach, your roster says, it's like the Cowboys situation. Your roster says you have enough talent to where you could be very productive, very good. But now you're starting all over yet again with another GM, another coach, and until LaFleur did it in Green Bay this year, first-year head coaches making the playoffs, good luck. So that means that you're already another year, year or so off, for the most part, from doing what you are possibly capable of doing, and you're starting over all over again. To me, it's just more mismanagement. This is the quiet version of Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder in the fact that the ownership in Cleveland is just complete. Jimmy Haslam, I believe it is, and all those guys. It's just completely out of whack.
Yeah, and Jimmy Haslam had that meeting, so I would imagine it was more of a Jimmy Haslam decision more than anything else, because they felt like there was doubt about his position, John Dorsey's position, going into the meeting, like even before, and that was kind of kept within the front office and within the team. I think it's a Jimmy Haslam decision. I mean, I'm not saying no one else had any contribution to
but
it.
But if you're John Dorsey, right, and you go, well, we want you to stay, but we're going to take away you having final say on football matters, Why would you agree to that? Here's a guy that resurrected the Kansas City Chiefs franchise and was responsible for all the pretty much everybody that made them who they are now. Then took the Cleveland job because they needed someone to save credibility and redo what was the definition of fledgling, embarrassing in terms of a football franchise. And guess what? He started to get them on the right direction. He put a roster that says that they're going to be good getting better. And instead they go, you know what? Because you screwed up on the coach, we're going to take away decision-making. What does that mean? The owner gets to make more decisions?
There's got to be more to it. Maybe he already knew that he wanted to fire general manager John Dorsey, and he knew that if he made that offer, Dorsey would decline it. I don't know. Maybe he was already done with Dorsey. Because when you look at the track record of just 2 years, it's hard for me to sit back and say, you know what? John Dorsey should have been fired. It's a justifiable fire. It's just been 2 years. I know we're on a short leash, and general managers tend to be put on a much smaller window, depending on who they are, how, you know, the relationship with the owner in the front office. But 2 years, he didn't necessarily botch everything and mess it up in the 2 years. He genuinely tried to make the team better.
But here's the thing,
Nick, seems to be good decisions, but it didn't play out on the field.
His main role as general manager, right, is to put together the roster with the best players possible, right? Did that. So if the only strike against him is he went with a gut feeling on an inexperienced head coach and it bit him in the butt, you fired him.
But are we?
You're paying him, but you can rebound from that because of the fact that you still constructed a very quality roster.
But aren't we kind of assuming that though? Are we just assuming that it's based on the Freddie Kitchens hire?
Well, what else can it be? When you look at what the moves that I just rattled off that he's made.
But if you look at it from an overall perspective, you say, all right, we messed up with the coach, but everywhere else.
Look at how many quarterbacks they went through. Look at how many guys, look at the futility of going a full season without a win. The fact that a beer company had to get involved to try and make a big celebration out of the fact that you actually won a football game. But all of a sudden, at the start of this year, because of what the general manager was able to do, they were being talked about as a sexy pick for the Super Bowl. They were being... The prognosticators were saying they were being picked to win their division. So suddenly you went from the laughingstock of the NFL to a team that had credibility. Now you're taking all the credibility away from saying, look, we made a mistake. You can rebound from that because, yeah, you got to pay him, but Freddie Kitchens, after 1 year, you're gone. You learn from your lesson. You learn your lesson from it. You get a veteran coach.
Here's a few of the moves that he made, as it states on TheAthletic.com. Dorsey joined the Browns late in the winless season of 2018. As you mentioned, he traded for Jarvis Landry. Drafted Baker Mayfield, drafted Denzel Ward, drafted Nick Chubb, Odell Beckham Jr., Sheldon Richardson. He retooled a roster that was depleted to the point of absurdity. And this happened after that winless season.
Right.
You're right. It's hard for me to look at this from an overall perspective and justify the firing. That's why I feel like there's something that Jimmy Haslam either knows or does not like about him.
Or doesn't know. Maybe he's just that dumb.
Or maybe,
that he keeps making stupid moves.
That's possible.
Because
very possible.
You look at Dan Snyder and be critical of him for all that, and that's fair. You look at Jerry Jones, who's dragged out 3 meetings with Jason Garrett. We still don't have a definitive answer there. And he's the GM, and he's doing press conferences, and you say, that's dumb. But maybe more stupid than that is what Jimmy Haslam's done quietly by continue to kick yourself in the grapes.
Yeah. They're going to have to, a lot of the articles I've seen is headlined only in Cleveland because
they're the laughing stock of the NFL, and it could be because of the owner.
It could be.
So there you have that. All right, Nicholas, I appreciate you as always.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Aaron.
It's been a fun show. Thank you, Aaron Raybould, as well. And Aaron's going to be doing double duty. He's coming up next along with Fred and AJ and the Blitz. They'll take you home till 7 o'clock. For Nick and myself, we'll be back tomorrow. TBD on Barry Laminack. Hopefully he's back as well for a Friday on the Usual Suspects. F yeah. But you guys have a great night. Enjoy the Blitz, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow right here on ESPN 97.5.